Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to Puma Podcast.
Apat na pong araw kaming nasa loob ng piitan at sa wakas nakauwi kami sa aming mga pamilya matapos na kami arestuhin. Sa paghihinalang may kinalaman kami sa pagsusunog ng isang minibus sa Catanawan, Quezon.
That's filmmaker Jade Castro speaking to the media last March 2024, hours after he and his three friends were released from jail. They were arrested without a warrant and detained for 40 days.
We reiterate that we are innocent of all charges. The senseless destruction of property cannot be countenanced, and in no uncertain terms do we strongly denounce it and condemn those behind it. My friends and I are creators after all. They are engineers. I am a filmmaker. We create structures, build homes, and reinforce buildings to outlast lifetimes, write stories, bring to life visions and creative ideas. For us to stand accused of destroying for no reason, that is something simply not in harmony with our being.
I'm Bella Perez Rubio, Puma Podcast, and you're listening to Teka Teka News.
In 2021, 1,200 attacks were perpetrated against artists worldwide. Filmmakers, especially women, who question certain narratives or dominant trends or challenge norms, are regularly subjected to intimidation, threats, harassment, and even arrests. Writers, poets, theater directors are too often imprisoned for speaking out, accused of endangering public order. Yet, when an artist is targeted, it is a fundamental right that is threatened. It is the freedom of expression of all that is endangered. Beyond personal tragedies, it is the identities, the traditions, and the transmissions of music, stories, secular practices that are then at risk of disappearing.
In this episode, we listen in as artists lobby the international community to do more to protect them as an increasing number of states move to harm them and stifle their work.
It is important also to recall that in times of crisis, artists and cultural professionals play an essential role in promoting dialogue and peace. And it is true in conflict-affected areas, but also in crises such as the COVID crisis pandemic, as we saw, and the role of artists was very clear during that period. Safeguarding culture and the voice of cultural professionals is not just a secondary need during crisis, it is a security and humanitarian necessity. It is therefore absolutely essential that they be properly protected.
The local cops behind the arrest of Jade and three others now face administrative charges. In an interview, Jade said he believed he was detained not because he was an artist, but because he was unknown. Still, his detention caused an uproar among filmmakers and fellow artists, who rallied behind him and his friends until a court ordered their release.
I think that, you know, I tend to straddle both the world of artists and also journalists because I do documentary films. And what I see and observe a lot within the journalistic community is that there are very structured systems and networks in place that provide support for journalists as soon as they're targeted. There is an incredible sense of solidarity also that has been nourished for decades when it comes to journalists in a way that is not accessible to artists.
That's critically acclaimed filmmaker Dia Khan. Her documentaries have won 2 Emmys, a Peabody, and a BAFTA. She was one of several panelists to participate in this event, held at United Nations headquarters in New York.
I think also for human rights defenders and particularly, you know, we also see women's rights defenders also and peace builders actually as well benefit from resources and again, international networks that I think artists do not have. So I think a lot of the needs that artists have are similar to the counterparts within journalism and human rights defenders, but the systems don't exist and the specificity of some of the needs. For example, if you take a heavy metal guitarist from Iran or a female singer from Iran out and make her safe, she also has to exist. So how artists then exist within their new lives.
As a UNESCO Goodwill Ambassador for Artistic Freedom and Creativity, Dia tries to draw attention to these kinds of concerns.
I think there are specific needs like that that we don't address for artists, but also just safe routes out. I remember when the Afghan catastrophe happened, there were so many artists, poets and musicians that started reaching out, as well as women's rights defenders. When I was doing, I call it sort of a tour of groveling and begging different governments to let people in, high-risk individuals in, they all were okay taking the female judges, they were all okay taking the journalists, they were all okay taking the human rights defenders, but musicians and the artists, they sort of didn't roll their eyes, but it was sort of, it wasn't even at the bottom of the list. They didn't really factor in because they didn't consider the role of artists as significant enough, and they also didn't consider the threat that artists were under significant enough, even though artists were being targeted first by the Taliban.
There was a recurring point raised throughout the panel. Artists have little to no formal protection in times of crisis, but they are often the first victims of repressive regimes. Here's the panel's moderator, Julie Tribault from PET America.
Indeed, in recent years, a myriad of crises, artists have found themselves targeted through violence, arrest and judicial persecution, threats, intimidatory acts, censorship, harassment in digital and physical spaces, the loss of income and work opportunities, and much more. At the worst of times, they have been killed. Conflict and crisis continue to plague the lives and work of artists in countries such as Afghanistan, Haiti, Cuba, Myanmar, Sudan, Ukraine, Yemen. And I would be remiss if I didn't directly highlight our deep and continued concern about the ongoing crisis in Gaza, the daily extinguishing of Palestinian creative voices, and the destruction and erasure of cultural spaces and heritage. We must recognize that it's not just during emergencies when artists need support, relocation, and opportunities to continue the work. Too often, as governments adopt authoritarian practices and tactics, artists find themselves in the crosshairs of their repressive gaze. Artists are free spirits and independent voices. Their creativity and ability to connect with the masses strike fear into the hearts of inspiring and established autocrats who seek to co-opt culture, to control narratives and close civic spaces.
We'll pause here. When we return, we look into what the international community is doing to protect artists and how much further we need to go. Hi, listeners. Thanks for tuning in to Tekateka News. We're so glad that you do, and we'd love to get to know you better. Our team is hosting a small gathering on May 2 from 6 to 9 p.m. in Makati. If you're free to join us, check out bit.ly/tekadinner for more details. See you there! In 2017, the UN Security Council passed a historic resolution establishing the international community's responsibility to protect cultural heritage in times of conflict. The resolution played a role in advancing the work of the UN Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. But UNESCO itself admits that more must be done to defend the human dimension of cultural heritage, artists. In fact, it was a 2023 UNESCO report titled Defending Creative Voices that spurred this panel discussion.
At the moment, unfortunately, we have very few mechanisms to support artists in times of emergency.
That's Alexandra Zanthaki, UN Special Rapporteur in the field of cultural rights.
The liquidity issue in the UN, the big secret, has made even the existing mechanisms not work very well. The special procedures, so my mandate and other relevant mandates, have received 15% of the money they receive every year. So you can imagine that really there is very little we can do.
The UN has been warning about its depleting funds for several years and has been forced to make cuts to the budgets of several key agencies. Its top donor, the US, slashed its budget under President Trump. Even though President Biden has reversed most of those cuts, the UN continues to face a funding crisis.
In the years past, human rights and environmental defenders, journalists, and women have achieved new normative frameworks for the security and protection. This has included commitments from states and regional bodies, mobilizing of resources, and the introduction of national-level legislation.
That's PEN America's Julie Tribot again.
Socially engaged creatives and cultural workers, visual artists, musicians, writers, composers, filmmakers, sculptors, poets, and a whole host of other disciplines are part of the same civil society as their counterparts and face similar type of repression. However, they are not offered the same protections. The artist's relationship to broad audiences is more profound, indelible, and consequential for advancing the defense of essential rights and freedoms. What we need now for this sector is a new framework for artists' protection and security.
In the absence of robust international protections, nonprofits like PEN America have stepped up. Here's novelist Dina Mengetsu.
In 2023, after many years of discussion with my colleagues at PEN America and Artists at Risk, the Center for Ethics of Writing at Bard College and Artists at Risk established a novel fellowship program for artists and writers around the world whose lives and often livelihood is at risk because of their work. We provide direct financial and institutional support to these artists, not for what they will do, but rather for what they have done and will hopefully continue to do despite having gone into exile. The logic and reasoning for this fellowship is both obvious and all too easy to ignore. We often work alone in silence and solitude, and the power of the artist's voice to shape and influence our culture is in part a product of that solitude, a solitude that is at once the source of our power and also the cause of a particular vulnerability faced by artists. More often than not, the artist stands alone, without the power or protection of an institutional force behind them, without a system that says the work you do matters, particularly in times of crisis. Because without that work, what is there for the next generation to turn to once the dust has settled? As we know, the decimation of cultural artifacts and history is all too often an unstated objective in times of conflict. And while it might be difficult to shut down a museum, a university, a concert hall, or a library, it's all too easy to quietly arrest, persecute, or send an individual into exile.
This is just one program, only in its first year of implementation. But it's a good example of the kind of distinct protection that artists require. Here's award-winning director and UNESCO ambassador, Dia Khan, again.
I remember I wanted to do a documentary about this years ago and wasn't able to do it. I found these stories of people who were in the concentration camps during Second World War, and they were creating music. I had no idea they were creating music, and the reason we know this is some of the pieces were smuggled out, written on toilet paper. Some of the guards actually got it out. And again, what is that? What is that? Why would somebody who knows what's about to happen to them still have that incredibly intense urge to create? Because it is about freedom. You can take everything from me, and I will still smile, I will still dance, I will still sing, I will still create. And the problem with that is that dictators, oppressors, authoritarians, they know this. They know the power of art. We can sit here in this room and sort of try to make the case for it and try to explain it to each other. But oppressors, they understand it. And the reason we know that they understand it is you can see how severely they punish and crush and repress it. That's why the numbers are as terrible as they are, because they understand. So what we're seeing everywhere is we're seeing artists being imprisoned, we're seeing them censored, we're seeing them banned, we're seeing books disappearing. We are seeing people, artists even killed and tortured. The Taliban, I always say, you know, whenever last time and this time when they came, before they destroyed, tried to destroy women and start the war on women, they made music go away. Music went silent. So this is what oppressors do. This is why we who are in a position to respond must protect the rights of artists, promote them and support them and ensure that they can continue to thrive and create freely. Because art is not a luxury, despite what my friends think. It is a basic human necessity.
And that was today's episode of Tekateka News. Again, I'm Bella Perez Rubio. Pidoy Blanco edited this episode. Our executive producer is Jill Caro, and our senior news editor is Veronica Uy. If you found this episode useful, share it with a friend or two, and thanks for listening.